inform all participants that this call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Go ahead. You may begin.
Thank you, operator.
Good day, and welcome to all of you who've joined us for today's session sponsored by ICANN's Intellectual Property Constituency Group, covering remote participation at ICANN Nairobi, where we will be covering available resources for understanding the issues, technologies used for understanding and attending remotely, and some of the important meetings and sessions in Nairobi that really deserve your remote participation. I'm Elisa Cooper with Mark Monitor, and I'll be moderating our session today. Before we get started, I'd like to spend just a few minutes familiarizing everyone with Adobe Connect, the online component of today's meeting. Our session is scheduled to last about 90 minutes today, and we'll be taking questions between speakers. You can also submit a question anytime throughout the presentation by using the online chat located on the left-hand side of your screen. During today's sessions, all participants' lines will be available and live, so we ask that participants mute their lines by either selecting star 6 or using functionality on your phone. Star 6 can be used to mute or unmute your line at any time, and this is to ensure that everyone can participate without any background interference. Finally, a copy of these slides can be provided to you by contacting me directly at ecooper@markmonitor.com. Why don't we go ahead and move on to the next slide? So let's talk a little bit about our presenters today. Our first presenter will be Nick Ashton Hart. Nick is the Senior Director of Participation and Engagement for ICANN, and he is responsible for recruiting new participants in ICANN's work and new communities of interest who are not presently involved, and to further empower existing volunteer communities so that all feel their time spent with ICANN is increasingly valuable and effective. Our second presenter will be Fabricio Vieira. Fabricio is the Chief Trademark Attorney for Time Warner and is the head of Time Warner's Online Enforcement Group. In this role, Fabricio advises on all trademark issues and reviews and takes action on online infringement matters, often acting as the lead and coordinating attorney for matters that touch various Time Warner divisions. Fabricio also handles all various Internet governance-related policy issues for Time Warner, liaising with constituency groups and the Time Warner Global Policy Group in Washington, D.C. And then finally, I know that Jay Scott has been leading today's session, but for our online viewers, I'd like to let them know that Jay Scott is the Senior Legal Director for Global Brand Trademark for Yahoo. Jay Scott has served on 5-member drafting committees that assisted the staff in the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, ICANN, with the drafting of the UDRP and the rules and procedures for the UDRP. Jay Scott also served as a member of the Implementation Recommendation Team, the IRT, which was charged with proposing possible solutions for brand protections in the new GTLDs. Jay Scott is an active member of of INTA, where he serves as a member of the Board of Directors and Special Counsel to INTA's Internet Committee. Jay Scott is currently president of the IPC, the body that participates on behalf of trademark and copyright owners in ICANN, where Jay Scott was recently voted as one of the top 50 most influential people in IP by Managing Intellectual Property magazine. Jay Scott frequently lectures on trademark and Internet policy issues as well as major resolutions. And finally, participating will be Fred Feldman, who's Chief Marketing Officer for Mark Monitor. So with all that said, why don't we take a quick look at the next slide.
Yeah, Fred, you're nobody, dude.
In my defense and his defense, I was asked to keep his brief.
No race for you, Elisa.
I know.
I said we didn't need to spend time on that. Now we have.
Okay,
so again, let's take a quick look at today's agenda, and then we'll jump right into it with Nick Ashton Hart from ICANN. So in terms of today's agenda, again, we'll be looking at the different resources and technologies that are available for remote participation. Then we'll talk about some of the important meetings in Nairobi, and specifically we'll look at the issues and the corresponding sessions. And then, as I mentioned, these slides can be made available to you upon request. So at this point, I would like to go ahead and turn it over to Nick Ashton Hart from ICANN.
Thanks very much for that introduction. Sorry, I had put myself on mute. I guess go to the first slide, literally. This is more like an advert. As you might imagine, for a lot of reasons, it's been clear since I started my new post in December that remote participation was going to be a major effort.
Thank you.
And we, of course, accelerated some work that would have perhaps taken place over a longer period in order to deal with the anticipated demand for remote participation at Nairobi, which is actually, it turns out, going to outstrip even our wildest hopes. So it's something that the whole organization is working on. There's a team of about 15 people who are doing this most of their time right at the moment. And the senior staff have made it clear to the whole staff that they need to do their part to meet the need. It's too big an opportunity for us not to deliver on. Next. When I took over, I was asked to come up with an approach that was more standard and more scalable. And I approached this from sort of three objectives, which is to create more standard options for different types of sessions so that it would be possible much further in advance to tell people what they were able to do. And, in fact, I don't know if anyone looked at the schedule around the 15th or 16th of February, but you will have noticed that we posted remote participation options for most sessions long before there was any other information about them. The idea here is, of course, to optimize spending, but mostly so that remote participants would know up front what they were going to be able to do, for example, in a working group meeting versus a large public forum. We also worked to ensure that those with restricted bandwidth had services that worked better for them, and that in general we should try and optimize bandwidth use for everyone. And the third is that is perhaps most important, is that the quality of the participation for those who are remote and those who are in the room should be more equal. In the past, there have been many concerns raised that if people, for example, would join a chat room for a session and there would be nobody in the room participating in it, and there was no real ability for those who were talking in the chat room to have their views raised in the room. Next, please. As I said, the actual way in which services are delivered is published. There's a link to it. Later on, I'll tell you where to find it. So you can see up front sort of the types of services that would be available to you at any point. It's, of course, there's some flexibility in the system. If a given meeting needs something that isn't normally available to that class of meetings, we're not going to say, no, I'm sorry, you can't have it. Obviously, we want to make sure that meetings have what they need. Next. As I said, we've reduced the bandwidth requirements. Audio streaming, for example, now comes in two flavors, a 64K channel and a 16K, which is a very big reduction for a lot of people. The other services are all available a la carte. You can choose anything except video on an a la carte basis, so people are free to choose only those options that make sense to them. And we are using, with only one potential exception, all the services are being delivered in a way that is both multi-platform and which does not require installation of software on the remote computer. The only potential exception to that is Adobe Connect itself, which depending on how you access it, will load a remote client. It doesn't have to. It will use Java in your web browser, or it will load its client. So you at least have the option. Because I know many people work in a commercial environment where their computers are not, you cannot install software on them. So that was the reason behind that. Next, please. One of the key things to do was to deal with the objection that was raised for people who are remotely participating in a meeting that does not have a teleconference bridge. How do you ensure that they have a way of being heard? This particularly affects some of the most loved, well, at least most popular, I suppose, sessions, such as the public forums and the board meeting, where there's a long tradition in ICANN, as you all know, of standing up and being able to say what you want to say to the board. We all thought it was very important that an element of that should be available to remote participants on an equal basis to those who are in the room. The result of this is, if there is a chat room, if a meeting is open, it's being streamed. And if it's open, it's also got a chat room, which at Nairobi will have a member of staff attending the chat room, whose job it is to take comments and questions from the audience and raise them in the room through the microphone on an equal basis to those who are actually physically in the room. So the moderator of the session would simply alternate back and forth between the chat attendant and the in-room attendants. The other thing, of course, is that all the meeting moderators and attendants are to ask all the people who are in the room to join the chat room and interact with the people who are not physically there to help lower the barrier between those who are remote and those who are physically present by, to the extent possible, at least having them all in one space where they can communicate with each other. Next, please. As I said, there are remote chat monitors who will be attending all the sessions that are open, and raising interventions that are made from remote participants on an equal basis. The one thing, of course, which is worth noting is there will be a disclaimer that any statements or questions which are not congruent with the expected standards of behaviors published in the accountability and transparency frameworks will not be read out. Wow, really convenient time for my computer screen to die. Oh, it's coming back a little.
Okay, you have to reboot it.
No, it's okay.
Me to go on to the next slide? Cause
yeah, it's decided. It's decided to work.
In their office. Still see. Do you know where your next slide is?
No, it's come back. I just thought from over there I was screwed, to put it mildly. As I said, if there's not enough time for questions or comments to be heard in the room, they will
it's
be.
Not the first time this has happened.
No.
Nick, are you there?
I am.
Are there others on the call? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you guys.
I can hear you.
Very good audio from here, I have to say.
Lisa, can you unmute your phone and tell us whether you can hear us?
Yes, we can hear you.
Nick, can you ask in the chat room?
Shall I go on? Oh, I see a yes.
Okay, I got a yes I can hear. Can everyone hear the audio? It seems that they can, but
oh,
I can't
good.
Hear Nick anymore. He's completely gone.
People can't hear us.
You can't hear me?
I'll just go through. The slides are sort of self-explanatory. If you'll look here, they're going to make an effort to have the recordings and transcripts available faster. Some sessions will post within 2 hours of the conclusion of the session, while others it may take 7 days to get the transcriptions out. And it really depends on the type of session that you're talking about. We've participated with Nick in a preparatory session, so I'm not just talking off the top of my head. These are things that he had said before.
Jay Scott.
Transcriptions of the board meeting would probably take a lot longer than probably a transcription at some other events at the thing. So the level of importance could have an effect. Nick, are you back?
Yeah, can you now hear me?
Okay.
Okay.
Here are the links to the various things that you can on the ICANN website that allow you to participate and learn more about remote participation. And as Elisa said, these will be available on the Mark Monitor website so that you can download these slides in your office, and then you will have these links available to you so that you can get more information and sort of play around with the ICANN website on your own, but also, more importantly, hopefully, you will participate in the meeting. I think this is a good point to probably point out that the registry constituency, I think that's correct,
right,
is holding a remote participation off-site meeting at a hotel in Reston, Virginia, and we will send that information out to the list after this meeting, so you should expect it next week. They are also, because it's going to be nighttime when most of this takes place, suggesting that most people get a hotel room if you want to participate, and I do believe they're going to get a block of rooms at a rate. So we will give you that information so that if you're on the East Coast, you certainly can participate there. Also, I think I should say that Mark Monitor has graciously offered their offices for about 15 people on the West Coast if you would like to participate in meeting jointly together, so it sort of resolves some of the complications and has people that can listen while you have to step to the restroom and those other things so you don't miss out, and it's collective. So those two efforts are going on to help those that are not attending Nairobi. All right. We're going to talk now about those hot topics that are coming up in the ICANN meeting that we believe, as your leadership at the IPC, are important, and we're also going to tell you when they're taking place during the ICANN scheduled meeting in Nairobi so that you can participate. Fred?
Do you want to check and see if Nick is back, because he was also going to do a demo, wasn't he?
No, we're going to skip that. We're going to skip the demo.
All right.
Because of the technical problems we've been having. All right. All right, here we go. Important sessions in Nairobi.
So some of the important sessions in Nairobi cover things that you've heard about, those who were in the room and had been part of the prior calls, things like the EOI process, trademark protections, introduction of TLDs generally, public forums that you heard Nick talk about earlier, the ICANN board meeting, and we're going to go ahead and cover those in the order that they're going to be presented during the ICANN meeting. As you see on this slide, it has the time and date. Times are local Nairobi times, so there'll obviously be some time shifting if you want to participate.
Yes, you can go to worldclock.org. Again, that's worldclock.org, and you can pick Nairobi, put in this time, and then pick your city, and it will translate the time for you so that you will know when that's going to be taking place in your local time. But these times are local Nairobi time.
Correct. So let's start with the EOI. This is an important session, obviously, because the EOI process may end up being basically a pre-registration for the new TLD. And the way it's being proposed currently, that pre-registration will determine what strings will actually be allowed in the first round of TLDs.
So can you tell, just for those participants who may have joined and not been here this morning, can you explain what EOI stands for and kind of what it is?
So it's expression of interest, and what that allows you to do is literally do kind of a short form application process where you get to put in an application for the string that you want and put up minimal information about who you are and what you plan to do with the string. And again, the importance of this is it's going to launch prior to the actual application period, prior to possibly a lot of factors in the TLD process being determined, but it actually will determine the universe of what strings will go forward in the new registration process. So it's something that I think people should listen in on. Comment period had closed on this, and there's going to be a lot of discussion on the EOI, so it's something that's important to listen to and find out where this is headed and hear all the different opinions as to why this may or may not be good.
And as Nick pointed out, you can choose the chat function, and you can ask your questions. And we heard earlier today from Kurt Pritz, for those of you that weren't on the call, that the ICANN Board of Directors is thinking of deciding whether they're going to approve the EOI process at Nairobi. So if you or your company have strong feelings about this, we encourage you to dial in and chat in and have your question asked, because he just said they're going to have ICANN staff monitoring the chat rooms, and they will stand up in the room and ask the question to whatever panel is presenting. So you actually will have your voices heard if you'll make the effort to show up. We've talked a lot today about trademark protection. You see that there's a 4 o'clock to 5:30 presentation Nairobi time of trademark protection and new GTLDs. Definitely this is a session that all trademark owners and their representatives should attend. I think that since we are not going to be there en masse on the ground, it is very important that we show up in en masse online and we make our voices heard. We heard today from WIPO. We've also heard through some INTA folks. Oh, for those on the phone, it stopped snowing here, so we're very excited. That they are not satisfied with the rights protection mechanisms that have been designed. That we believe that is an over compromise of where we need to come from. And if that is what you believe, then you need to show up at this session, and you need to make that clear to the ICANN staff and board that you are not satisfied. And so that is a very important session for you to participate in. We're moving now to Tuesday.
So Tuesday, introduction to new GTLDs. You know, I think many people know something about or a lot about new TLDs, but if you really want to get a where did this come from, where are we now, where is this going summary, this will be a really good session to sit in on. It'll give you a flavor of what ICANN is stating the purposes are for new TLDs, why they're pushing what they're pushing, especially timelines and things like the EOI and all the fun stuff that keeps getting infused into the new TLD program proposal. So for those who know something about the TLDs or feel they know a lot, I think this will still be beneficial.
Moving on to later in that day, at 11 o'clock to 12:30, there is a meeting of the Commercial Stakeholders Group. And for those of you that may be new to the ICANN process, let me explain to you what that is. That is under the new structure that has been imposed upon the constituencies by the ICANN board, the new decision-making structure. The Commercial Stakeholders Group is a group that combines the Internet Service and Connectivity Providers constituency, the ISPCP, the IPC, the Intellectual Property constituency, and the business constituency, the BC, into one sort of house or group that has to come together with positions on voting and certain other administrative processes within flushing out the GNSO council. So this meeting will be held. At this stage, I have only seen some emails back and forth about a proposed agenda. I have not seen an agenda that has been put together, but we will, as soon as that is finalized, push that out to the IPC list, and we will also let Fred will post it as well, so that those of you that are not on the IPC list will have this information about the agenda. One of the benefits of it is because it is a group coming together of diverse interests, many times have speakers and presentations on individual issues that are kind of matriculating themselves through the ICANN policy process. So if you see something, it would be on the agenda that is important to your organization or company or to your business plan, you need to attend this meeting because this is a one-on-one. In Seoul, we had Doug Brent, who is Chief Operating Officer, come in and give a presentation. So it is a unique opportunity for you to hear the views of others similarly situated but divergent from you, and also to get a voice in front of the ICANN staff and policymakers in the process. So now we're going to move to Wednesday, and Fred, you're going to have to fill us in on this one.
Yeah, just before I get into Wednesday, I'd just like to say is the IPC is a great opportunity to participate for brand holders who aren't in this room or aren't members of the IPC to actually work with like-minded IP concerned folks from large organizations to actually have a community to really understand how to work with ICANN. And there are two ways really to participate. One in this remote way that we're talking about, also through comments. And I'd like to encourage folks to not only participate remotely, but also to submit comments, because as much written commentary as we can get on these topics is also very important.
And on that point, I think we should point out that over the years, and Steve, I think, and Nick, and everyone would agree with me that are sitting in this room, one of the things we continually hear from the ICANN board is, you know, I know that INTA and Steve's organization, the coalition, file comments, but they really want to hear from individual companies. They want to know that Procter & Gamble is unhappy, that Yahoo is unhappy, that Microsoft is unhappy. That resonates with the board. When we file general comments, as we should do as larger organizations, it becomes noise to them. And we need the voices they're looking for are individual brand owners. So as Fred said, participating in the meetings and filing comments is very, very important. You don't have to do it on everything, but you should on the high-level issues. And the IPC is happy to assist you in sifting through all the noise to figure out where your voice most needs to be asserted and heard.
And just moving on to the registration abuse prevention working group session, there they'll be presenting the initial findings from this group's draft recommendation to the GNSO. And basically, this draft seeks to solve the, or at least to make some recommendations on how to solve the problem with respect to a uniform application of rules and approach to abuse in the domain name registration system. And we're making a recommendation to ICANN and also to the GNSO on what policy actions they should take going forward. The draft report is complete. It will be presented at this meeting. And I think it's really quite interesting and perhaps important if folks have a chance to read and comment both verbally and in writing on the cyber squatting recommendations. There are two of interest there. One is with respect to UDRP. We heard from WIPO today in the earlier meeting, and it's probably important for us to think about how we can improve UDRP without messing up the vehicle, because it's a very important tool for us for enforcement. And the wording here should be very careful. So if you have some insight and to help us make that a better recommendation, it'd be great for you to do that at this meeting. Also, an important recommendation is to integrate the rights protection mechanisms that are planned for new gTLDs in the legacy TLDs. So it would be very important for brand rights holders to make their assent to that recommendation known if they can during this meeting. And lastly, actually, two last items at this meeting. There's a recommendation on conformity of the registration agreement, the registrar's agreement, and we'd like to hear from brand rights holders on that. And we'd also like to hear about mandatory or at least best practices recommendations for abuse from rights holders. So if you can participate, those are the areas in which we'd like to hear some response. So.
Fred, is there a paper that informs these recommendations?
Not
yet.
Oh, there is a paper.
There is a paper. Is there any way you could post that on your website as well, or a link to it, so that those people who are IPC members would have a vehicle of getting to it so they can inform themselves on the issues so that when they participate?
Yep.
Okay?
Absolutely.
All right, great. Now moving to Thursday, you see we start early on Thursday or late, depending on where you're located, with the ICANN Public Forum. And one of the most fascinating things about this is why you go to an ICANN meeting live, is because this is where you get to see the temperature of the community in general, and you get to see the divergent views that are expressed with regards to the many issues that we have a particular focus and look at. And I have always found it very informative because it challenges you and many times makes you begin to have to think outside the box. It also helps you a great deal in forming your strategy with regards to how and whom you need to lobby in order to, or educate on issues, because many times you find out that there are gross misunderstandings with regards to positions that either your company and or the IPC has taken, and you'll hear that misinterpretation, and it gives you an opportunity to identify those parties or those groups that you need to spend some time educating on what the real message is. And many times, and Fabrizio, who attended his first ICANN meeting in Mexico, I think, would attest to this, it's amazing how when we actually sit down and have discussions one-on-one with people, how many, what I would say, light bulb moments they have about we're talking about rather than reaction, as if we're trying to burn down the domain name system.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's a good opportunity to avoid the situations you find a lot in today's business operations, that you have misunderstandings with email exchanges, voicemails, actually being able to sit down with someone on the other side who's done nothing but read your postings, your submissions for a year, and thought, hey, from my position, I don't like this. You can actually sit down and say, you know, I just heard you speak. I'd like to actually correct some issues that you were bringing up to say, really, we don't mean that. Is that what came across in our paper? What we really mean is this, and we don't think that there's really conflict here. And you do have a lot of those light bulb moments. So it actually helps progress the issues.
So attending this session assists you in identifying those parties that do have misunderstanding. It also helps you get a temperature of where other people are coming from, so you can understand what the general temperature is. And again, with this chat function available, which you should really use, you can be at the microphone from your desk or from, many of us, our bedrooms as we sit on there and type through to the center. But you should take advantage of this. Get your voices heard. It's very important. And this opportunity to do this, you should take full advantage of.
Right.
Moving to Friday.
So Friday, much different than Thursday. The Friday meeting is the ICANN board meeting where, in effect, this puts the pretty bow on the whole session, the whole week. This is where the ICANN board comes out and tells you the results of any votes that went on that week, really summarizes what they heard and what they're going to do going forward, what the mandates are for the different working groups, et cetera. I say it's unlike Thursday because you don't have an opportunity to actually put anything on the record, say anything, rebut anything. You really do sit back and listen. As Jay Scott mentioned, my first meeting in Mexico, I definitely sat through this because it was very enlightening to see, after a whole week's worth of work, lobbying, positioning, arguing,
cajoling,
everything, see what the result of that was. And this is that moment where you sit back, you wait, and you see what they're going to say or how they interpreted what you did. By this point, if you're following our advice, you've probably effectively switched your time zones and you can sit through this. But if you're getting to the point where you say, hey, it's Friday and I need some rest, the good part about this is it's not an opportunity to submit any comments, so you're not missing anything if you go back and actually listen to the recording. So if at this point in life you want to take a little break and catch up over the weekend, you actually can go back and listen to the entire recording and the transcript of the ICANN board. In essence, they almost pre-script this and read it anyway, so you're going to get the same effect. You're not going to miss anything if you catch this later, but it is important to see what the result was.
And what you, for those of you that don't know this, the value of attending either remotely or in person an ICANN meeting is the week of, there's a lot of things that happen. By the time you get to Friday, you actually have sort of a fait accompli. And I can tell you that there have been major issues derailed because of discussions that have happened in public forums that have then created side meetings that have then informed what the board does, and the agenda has changed or the item. In fact, I will tell you that the IRT, that's the reason we have the IRT, is because we were on the ground there making noises and letting them know that this was important to owners. And that is, you really need to participate. They really need to hear from you. And I am concerned, and I raised it this morning for those of you who aren't here, about some of the things that I am concerned that the ICANN board might try to push through, because we are all in a different time zone and not paying attention. So it is going to be very important that we are listening and monitoring and paying attention and getting our voices out. So please, please, please participate and use these tools. We also wanted to talk about some other sessions of interest that we don't believe are as mandatorily important for you to attend, but if you're going to take the effort and time and want to be a participant, you certainly should. GNSO working sessions will take place on Saturday and usually on Sunday as well. And you'll see on the schedule what the particular subject matter of those are. And what those usually are is those are the sub-working teams that are actually working and reviewing the issues that ultimately ends many times in a recommendation to the board or to the GNSO or at least a paper that is reviewed. And if there's a particular something that you have interest in or affects you, review that schedule and dial in and participate in those sessions. Again, I don't think it's absolutely mandatorily necessary that you do, but I do believe if you have a passion about something, this is a way to affect the policy that you're eventually going to have to live with.
You might want to explain what GNSO is.
Yeah, I'm sorry. To those of you that aren't on ICANN world in your blood like those of us in the room, the GNSO is the generic name supporting organization. And under the ICANN policy development process, that is a body that creates and charters working groups that then make recommendations on policy to the GNSO Council and then are passed up to the ICANN board. And historically, depending on how they pass up to the ICANN board, depending on the vote level they get, is whether the ICANN board has to accept it wholesale or can send it back or tweak it in some particular manner. I think there's a supermajority, which means they have to swallow the bitter pill whether they like it or not, at least under the current structure. So that's what it is. These are the sessions where the sub-teams, which you don't have to be on the, you don't have to be an ITC member, you don't have to be GNSO, you know, you just have to have an interest and you can participate. Okay, Monday.
So Monday. Monday is going to be a whole discussion about the affirmation of commitment. The affirmation of commitments are what now govern ICANN. It's something that was just passed through this last fall. And if you are concerned about the overall ICANN process, not the bits and pieces that the GNSO is going to be talking about, not just trademark, but you're looking at this process and saying, hey, listen, I don't think they're accountable. I don't think they're transparent. I don't think that all these comments, these working groups, these meetings this week are helping, are helpful, what's happening here. This is what you want to sit down and listen on because this really governs how they operate, how they respond to your comments, and how you see the inner workings, how that's delivered up to you. So the affirmation commitment is definitely something to look into if you've gotten to that level and are interested in changing or getting input into the overall ICANN process. Do you want to do Wednesday?
Wednesday. The role of the GAC is changing at ICANN, and the last, when they signed, for those of you that aren't sure what this is, the affirmation of commitment is the document that replaced the memorandum of understanding with the Department of Commerce for the United States government. And when they signed this particular document, they said that they would do some reviews of processes within the ICANN process. And they gave the Government Advisory Council, which is GAC, you see here on the slide, a role within that, which they have never actually had. They've sort of always sat on the side and had a consultative role, but no oversight or review role. And they are now going to be very actively involved in the review. So this session should be quite informative for how ICANN is going to be reviewed and do self-review. And so I think it's an important session, but it may be too granular for people. But if you're upset about the whole GTLD thing or you're upset about ICANN in general, you need to listen in on this and get involved in this debate early on, and I would say that this is a session that you need to attend. Also, the GNSO Vertical Integration Working Group. Currently, there are restrictions within ICANN's processes of the interrelationship between a registry, the wholesaler of domain names, and a registrar, the retailer of domain names. One particular entity, I believe it is Demand Media, has pushed very strongly to break down the walls that exist currently within those restrictions of ownership and relationships. And so they have put together a vertical integration working group whose charter is not yet approved. I see Christina Rosette in the room here. She and I have been working on the chartering subcommittee, and I think it hasn't been sent to the GNSO Council yet. So, but they're pushing to get it approved and through the council so they can hold this meeting. I think, personally, this is one of the most important issues, but it may be too granular, but if you're concerned about gaming of the system or the cyber squatting that you need to put up with or the fact that there are five registrars that are all connected and they just switch names back and forth, think how awful that would be when it's the wholesale ad. They control both channels of trade. So I would, Christina, step up here if you want to speak so that they can hear you on the phone. Christina Rosette has raised her hand.
Sorry. I just to follow up on that, the GNSO Council will be approving the Vertical Integration Working Group Charter at its meeting the Wednesday morning. So basically immediately before that working group meeting is scheduled, the council is scheduled to vote on it.
Okay.
Right. And you know, this is on additional sessions because, again, when you know, most people on this call are saying to themselves, well, I'm not a registrar. I'm not sure I'll ever be a registry. Why do I care? And I think the reason you care is because this is information. These people have, when you are a registry and are a registrar, you have direct access to a lot of information that actually lends itself to possible gaming. And the gaming is the type of stuff that you do care about, which names come available. If there's a name that has a lot of traffic that is something that's an infringement of your brand, the registry is now going to know that, and now they also have the capability to actually register themselves. So they can start picking up, moving, dropping, and hiding the ball on things that you care about and all the time actually monetizing and profiting from these things. And you're not going to know that because it's at such a high level. It actually comes almost, you know, directly from the people who run that space. So it definitely is an important issue whether you are a registrar or registry. It matters to you. So.
And it's here so that you know about it and that you're aware of it. We're watching the issues for you. We're going to try to push things out to everyone. Fred?
Yeah, there's one other issue on vertical integration. If you are considering your own TLD, it does have specific implications for you if you're a single registrant TLD, because this precludes you in its current state from actually being the registry and the registrar for your own TLD if you're a single registrant TLD. So some special edge cases that are of special interest to brand rights holders.
I would say also, though, that one of the people that's pushing the opposition against this, Brian Cute from, where's Brian? His affiliate has said that he believes that could be an exception to the rule. If you define certain parameters, such as you are a single registrant registry, in other words, you're only person registering, might be able to be an exception to that. So we have made some inroads, but it's not been formalized in any fashion yet.
It has to be careful because demand media may end up being a single registrant.
Yeah.
TLD in some cases also, so it's a sword that cuts both ways.
Okay, I see real quick that we have two hands raised. Andy, I'm going to let you go first, and then Eric, you can then go. Andy, can you speak? Hello? If you can't, we're not hearing you, so if you want to type in your question into the Adobe, Claudio, can you see anybody?
I see it now.
Okay. I just have, he's raised his hand.
Hold on for 1 second. I think we had an audio issue, which I can fix in a second, I think.
Andy's line has disconnected.
His audio system goes to sleep.
Oh.
So, Andy, if you can speak in 1 second. Hold on. It should work now.
Andy, can you speak?
Andy's line has disconnected.
Okay. How about Eric Bruner-Williams?
Sure, thank you, Jay Scott. Yes, your message to the members that this is where the gaming is right on point, whether they're interested in being registrars or registries or in single registrant model. This is where the first 100,000 names and all the value associated with it is gamed and played. In addition to Brian Cute from Aphelios' opposition to this, which I believe is joined by Newstar, CORE is also opposed to the change, the proposed change that Demand Media and also Network Solutions have advocated earlier. Thank you.
And I think that's very telling to those of you that aren't familiar with this process. When you have three, and I would say, in my opinion, three entities that have always tried to be responsible members of the community to brand owners standing up, that should be a huge flag of how this is an important issue that needs to stay the same. It doesn't need to change. You know. All right. Forum on DNS abuse.
So, you know, in the prior slide, you saw sessions on trademark protections and things of that nature. And I think this forum, you know, could be very useful in that it's going to talk about general domain name system abuses, some of the things that the result of which, you know, vertical integration could result in abuses, what the current issue is with abuses on the domain name system, what we expect them to be in new TLDs and things of that nature, I think will be discussed here. And to the extent that you can listen in and provide specific instances of abuses and how you propose fixing them or how they're not being addressed, you should, you know, sit in on this and put in your comments.
So now what we have for you is the link. And this is the link that will take you to the schedule that then will show where the meetings are. And at the top, there is a link to the remote participation. And the way the page is set up, let me see if I can just...
You should be able to click on it.
Get there. The way this is set up is, you see here it's got schedules and facilities. And I believe the schedule is just a schedule of when the particular meetings are taking place.
Below as well.
Oh, is it below as well? Well, here you go. You see here? Now, what's interesting here is you see it's got the schedule over here under session. But it also will tell you, depending on the type of technology you're working off of, what they're offering. So you see here, low bandwidth, high bandwidth, and they'll tell you what they're going to have involved. They also will be covering different languages because they do have a simultaneous translation taking place. So if you're dialing in and you are not an English speaker, you speak French and I think Spanish, or taken care of, then you can dial in or go through there, and everything is going to be in that particular language to assist you to remotely participate. So I think that that's a really great thing for us.
Yeah, and definitely take a look at the whole schedule. I mean, we're highlighting some of the things that we believe from intellectual property constituency, IP owner, level are interesting, and you know, knowing that people have limited time, that the schedule is going to be shifted to odd hours, these are things you should focus on. But take a look at the schedule because there are things that may interest you that we haven't highlighted. There are things that may be there that are be useful for you just to sit in as a background, you know, background information. And you know, as you've heard already on this call, the most important thing about this is, it's not just you learning and you hearing other people speak about this. It's actually you participating and being put into the record, having your company on the record, noting that, you know, even from I don't understand this, you didn't make this clear enough for me to participate, that needs to be part of the record, because if it's not part of the record, the staff who then goes through synthesizes the record and then presents it to people like the GNSO, who then votes on that synthesized portion up to the board, you're not part of even the information that gets down to the voting section. Your concerns aren't even on the table when the voting goes through. So it's very important that you actually go through and put yourself on the record.
Okay, at this point, we're going to take some questions, and we've got a question in the room from Ken Taylor from Marksman.
Not really a question, but just important for people who are not IP folks to know that the other stakeholders and the other constituencies are very active. So, sort of based on the IP, the other voices will be heard.
So for those of you that didn't hear Ken's comment, he said that many of the participants in the ICANN process are not intellectual property owners or in the intellectual property field or attorneys and do not share our view, and they show up en masse, and they are very loud and make a lot of noise. And as we've seen, and I see WIPO shaking their head, there have been a lot of compromises made because they were trying to oil the squeaky wheel. And so if you want to move things forward in a way that's proactive for our interests, we need to make a clamor that is just as loud and resonating as the opposing forces. And failure to do so will be a very, very, very expensive and frustrating process on the back end.
Right, because the one comment you do hear a lot at ICANN meetings when you stand up as a brand holder and say, you know, this is an issue, it's a very popular retort, where have you been? Where were you when this was put up for comment? And even pointing to your constituency groups and saying, well, I was there, I submitted comment via X, or I signed on to that letter, you really are discounted to some extent. And they say, but where were you? Where was your name? Where was your hand up? This is an opportunity to put that aside and to have your voice heard so that that can't come back at you.
With minimal effort, I mean, you're not going to have to fly halfway around the world.
Right.
And so, you know, we've clamored to get this remote participation put together. ICANN has put some resources behind it. They've developed some tools, and so we strongly encourage you to use those. Do we have any more questions? Steve.
Yeah, I think one session you didn't mention, but we heard about a little bit mention of it this morning, is the President's Report. Monday morning, local time in Kenya. And I think we were told that the President will make some announcements about the economic studies, and I can't remember, I think there was another one.
That's correct. For those of you that didn't hear Steve's comment, he said that the President's Report will be delivered on Monday morning at the Nairobi meeting. You need to check the schedule. That's usually at the opening session, and it'll say President's Report. And he was saying that earlier today, for those of you who were not in attendance, that Kirk Pritz implied in some ways, and then expressly stated in others, that in that report there's going to be coverage of an economic analysis that will not be formally released until after the Nairobi meeting. And since this is one of the overarching issues, it's very important for us to sort of get a read on where they're headed. And so that may be something that you want to tune into. So check that schedule and participate. Do I have any hands on the phone? Is there anyone on the phone that would like to ask a question? Okay, anyone else in the room have any questions? Then I'm going to allow Elisa to wrap us up.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today, and I'd especially like to thank our presenters, Nick Ashton Hart, Fabrizio Vira, Fred, and, of course, especially J. Scott Evans. So thank you all so much for attending today's session covering remote participation at Nairobi. For those who joined the call as part of Mark Monitor's Brown Bag session, I'd like to let you know that this portion of the call is now ending and that you are free to disconnect. With that, have a great day.
For those of you that are remaining, I did see some questions came up. So if Victoria, if you can, if we can hear you, if you want to ask your questions, we've got a little extra time. I'm not hearing anything. What I'd like to do at this point is I'd like to take another break, and let's take 10 minutes at this time. And then when we come back, I would like our NAF representative to come and give their report, because that will give us 20 minutes. And then we'll move on into Christina's presentation, which is happening at 3. So if we, everybody take a break, those of you on the phone, again, thank you for your patience with all the technical problems we've had today. And step away. We're going to start back. It is 2:25. I plan to start us back at 25 until the hour. Everybody, we're back online, and originally on our schedule for today, we had slotted a presentation from Christine Durain from National Arbitration Forum. And we were running late because of technical difficulties, but we've made up that time. So now I'm going to turn it over for a NAF report on developments in the UDRP and everything. So take it away.
I don't have a ton to report, but I thought I would start off by talking a little bit about the EUDRP or paperless filing option has been ongoing for almost two full months now, or about two full months now. I think probably most of the people on this call or in the room are aware that the rules essentially go paperless on Monday, March 1st. So up until then, it's been more or less optional, but on Monday, March 1st, there's no more sort of optional about it. We're going to stop taking paper copies and serving paper copies to the parties. That should be a lot easier for everybody involved. We've had really, really good response to the EUDRP for this initial couple of month trial period, and I saw was WIPO's slides were flicking through. I thought, you know, they kind of reported the same thing. So we've had about 106 cases filed and 9 decisions on those already in the not even 2 months that we've been doing, or about 2 months that we've been doing this. I haven't had time to figure out if the statistics are any faster on EUDRP. I would suspect that they're not going to be significantly faster for the most part, unless the panelists also start working faster. Simply because the only time difference that the EUDRP offers is the fact that we don't have to sit around and wait for the hard copies to arrive. And most of our bigger filers already knew how to get the hard copies to us simultaneously with the e-copy. So for most of the big filers, we weren't waiting for that anyway. I'm waiting to kind of find out if the fact that we're sending the cases electronically to the arbitrators, it will help speed up the process even more. Our average time to decision is about 47 or 48 days, with some cases resolving in as few as 28 or 29 days. So it'll be interesting to see if that kind of inches faster or not. Simultaneous with that, on March 1st or Monday, we're also launching an upgraded website. It's not going to be noticeably different from the front page, but if parties want to file online, the system will be a lot easier. So those are a couple of the things that the forum is doing to sort of make, filers' lives easier and our lives easier as well, just to be able to take in those cases online, let parties pay securely online. But we've had really, really good feedback about the paperless process, and we have had no complaints even, you know, from respondents either. What we've typically found is that most respondents, if they're going to respond, they're going to respond via email, and it's like pulling teeth to try to get them to send a hard copy anyway. So at this point, we don't have to wait around for the hard copy. Once they send us the response via email, we can just carry on. So that's kind of what we're looking at with that. So those are the most recent updates as far as, you know, what we've been doing internally. We also, with respect to the paperless process, we also put out some new supplemental rules. We changed nothing in them except for a typo. And the sort of the e-filing procedures, which is, you know, the file formats and that sort of thing. But we've invited comments, so if anybody in the IPC wants to comment on the form supplemental rules, we're also looking at making some more substantive changes again. We do that every couple of years. It's been over two years. So we're looking at maybe making some more substantive changes to the supplemental rules. And if you go to the front page of our website, there's a link to do to comment. So if there's anybody in the IPC who's interested in sort of weighing in on how things could be done differently or what, you know, how things could be better, we would welcome that feedback. And that's something new that the forum is doing at this point. We haven't traditionally offered opportunity for a comment in the past, so we're doing that now. I wanted to take advantage of having everybody present to talk about a couple of the ICANN initiatives or a couple of the ICANN things that are going on right now as well. And that is to talk to you people who are in a position, you know, most of you have advocated really strongly for the Uniform Rapid Suspension System and other trademark protection mechanisms, which we support, you know, of course, all the trademark protection mechanisms we can get. But a couple of things that I thought I wanted to just point out, because I know that you guys as a group are in a position to help ICANN weigh in more heavily on some of these things and maybe help kind of guide ICANN as they're finalizing what those rules are going to look like. So from a provider standpoint, because the providers, I don't know about WIPO, but we haven't been asked what sorts of, like we haven't been invited specifically to participate in the URS and say what works as a provider and what doesn't. We have a lot of different, a lot of perspective from handling almost 14,000 cases about what constantly goes wrong and what the sticking points are. And nobody specifically called us and asked, you know, how could the URS address some of those procedural problems inherent in the UDRP? Because I know the Registration Abuses Working Group kind of talks about some of these abuses and things. So one of the first things about the URS is that, from what I can tell, the process is not going to be significantly shorter. I think people are going to expect it to be shorter, but it's not looking like it's going to be that much shorter, really. Unless, like I said, unless the arbitrators come back with their decisions faster, it's not really any faster. And that being said, it's not any cheaper to administer. It's actually going to cost more to administer from a provider standpoint, because now from the rules that are out there right now, we have to mail more. We have to now mail a copy of the default, where we don't do that. Now we just email that. Respondent can come back 30 days later, causing more sort of, now we have to have more coordinator time to continue handling a case that was closed. Appeals for up to 2 years. Again, you're continually handling cases that are closed. So those are the types of things that will actually make the process a little bit more cumbersome and more expensive. So our concerns are that it's actually going to cost the providers more to administer the URS than it does the UDRP.
Well, you know, I think that the way to handle that is you all need to weigh in on the public comment and make that very, very clear. This is up for public comment. You need to make it extremely clear, because I can tell you those were compromises that were made, not because IP owners wanted them. And I was many times, and Christina can say this as well, at least at the STI level, amazed at the people that were taking the positions they were, because the very people they seek to be representing and trying to protect are the very ones that are going to be harmed by all this additional paperwork.
Right.
It's the poor lady who owns the thing that the evil trademark owner is trying to take away, right? And they've made it so complicated and cumbersome for this person, mm-hmm. rather than easy and streamlined.
Right.
And we're in a world where you buy your domain name completely online. You can do your mm-hmm. taxes now completely online.
Yeah.
So most people that are going to have owned a domain name legitimately are comfortable mm-hmm. operating in that space. And I think that needs to be pointed out from what I would say is that administrative point of view, rather than that what they see as a trademark owner pig at the trough view, that we just want everything, and to point out the practical realities. And I think you should file comments to that.
Filed comments twice. Everything that I'm seeing today, I've already filed comments on twice.
And I would do it again.
And I'm going to continue to do it again.
And I would also copy the board on your comments.
Okay.
Don't just do it to staff, because it gets lost in all of that. Or copy Beckstrom. Get it up to the senior level and quit allowing staff to garbage it in and garbage it out for you,
yes.
because they're taking away the message.
They really are, and it's not getting out. And these are problems that I see being a problem, and I saw your hand and Fabrizio.
I was just going to make a comment that when you submit these comments,
uh-huh.
forward them to our groups, because the problem is, a lot of times we won't know it's out there, and so then we're making, you know, they hide your comment or they garble it up.
Right, yeah, they really did in the summary.
We're discarded because we're the evil brand owner who wants to make it easy to affect the poor lady down in the Delta.
Right.
You know, somehow doesn't have money to check her email because on a 5-month vacation.
Right. She can't respond, right?
if I, for example, knew that Sarah, I don't actually have to make the argument. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I can actually stand up and say, practically speaking, this doesn't need, and we don't need to argue about it, because
mm-hmm.
neither I nor you run a dispute mechanism. The guys who actually do are telling you this is the reality. So there's actually no argument to be had. And
right.
So definitely I would, once you do them, as a lot of people need to pursue, forward mm-hmm. say, just FYI, we filed this.
Oh, I will. I mean, that's great, because I mean, I feel like, sort of like you pointed out in your presentation, I'm one voice in all of ICANN, and I keep trying to say to that, well, you know, I'm coming today, and I'm going to try to say to a bunch of
Brian,
people.
Brian, if you step up closer to the mic so that we don't have to repeat, because some of the things that are being said are more substantive.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to underscore that the WIPO EDRP initiative was exactly going to these types of efficiencies that can be gained by provider experience, and we have reached out both informally to staff and formally in virtually all of our public comment letters that have dealt with rights protection mechanisms to work with ICANN on formulating best practices to streamline these rights protection mechanisms. And I'll just for the record reiterate that willingness to work with them today and see where it goes.
Okay, and I think that that's very important. Christina, I saw your hand up. Do you have
I was just going to underscore what you were saying about sending it to Beckham, because sooner or later, sometimes later than sooner, anything sent to him is, in fact, going to end up on the correspondence page,
mm-hmm.
which a surprisingly large number of people actually check regularly. And certainly, if there's an opportunity to do so that doesn't look as if I'm kind of hitting everybody on the council over the head with it, I'm happy to post to the council list something that, you know, and this would be true for WIPO as well, Brian, something to really kind of, you know, again, if there's an opportunity to do so that isn't
mm-hmm.
going to backfire, I'm happy to do
sure.
it.
And I think you should send it to, I'll give you a contact at USPTO and also to Suzanne Sin at the Department of Commerce, so that our GAC, if people involved, can bring it up to GAC and say, listen, this is only so much noise. If they're ignoring the people who are telling you this functionally isn't going to work or it's going to make things worse. So it's not just trademark owners. It's a concerted effort, as we spoke of earlier, Brian, during your presentation, of getting the message out.
Right. Well, thank you for all of that. yeah.
I have a question. Thinking about some of the comments that NAF filed
mm-hmm.
about the URS, and I remember there was the concern that it might be slipped into the ERP. That's still a concern you guys have?
No.
Okay. The question that Claudio asked for my NTA was, does Christine think that the URS, as proposed in the latest iteration, is going to replace the UDRP? Because that had been earlier comments that she had made.
Yeah, and I would say no, especially in its current iteration. I think that it's so cumbersome at this point that not very many people are going to take it unless it's almost free. And from a provider standpoint, it's going to cost more to run, so I don't see it being almost free. I don't know how much it would be, but I don't see it being almost free. just a couple other things just to kind of put them up in your line of thinking, but those this will be all in writing, but the where you talk about the little lady down in the Delta or whatever, you know, why are we doing a compliance check on the response? All of the materials are going to the panel anyway, so does it really matter if the response is compliant or not? It's just more staff time, you know, it's just building more cost and more time into the process that doesn't need to be there. So I'll put all of those in a nice little table. And I kind of wanted to echo, this was on my comment list, so, I mean, I don't probably need to repeat what Brian said, but substantively amending the UDRP, I mean, I think that while I think the UDRP procedurally has a lot of problems that need to be straightened out, and we've done some of that with the UDRP initiative and some other ways to fix it, substantively I think there's so much UDRP jurisprudence out there that, and no panel is ever bound to even follow, you know, they sort of interpret the UDRP as it is. So if we open everything up to a policy development process, create new substantive, you know, a greater substantive expansion of the UDRP, the panel may or may not take that anyway. So we've now gone through this whole process for almost nothing. So the panels are going to kind of continue to follow that sort of ball of jurisprudence as it continues to gain momentum, but I don't think that, you know, changing the UDRP is going to significantly change how panels will make their decisions. Just my perception. I don't want to take the time because we're running out and I have to catch a plane. Any questions just for a couple minutes?
So just one quick point. We sit on the RAPWG, and I do agree that the missing voice in connection with some of these recommendations was that of, you know, perhaps WIPO and NAF. And it may make sense that once we get back again, because we're going to be coming back to discuss some of the commentary with the recommendation of the report that was put out there, that perhaps you guys can find a way to sit on that, or at least listen in on the report.
We would
participate,
be happy.
Whatever it is,
sure.
That voice, you know, certainly is something that we should be paying attention to.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, to say to both of you, that and Fab and Christina, I think, will back me up on this. We knew that we didn't have the expertise at the IRT level to do this. And what we thought staff would do
mm-hmm.
is sit down in a room with you all and say, here is the skeleton that we've been given. Can this be done? And they never did. Again, I think the most monumental failure of this whole process has been the failure of ICANN to project manage correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for people in the in a computer business, where project managers are paid a lot of money to manage product, the fact that they have not managed this project well is fundamentally disturbing to me. And I hope that the affirmation of commitments review will point that out very loudly and very strongly. Thank you so much
for your
time. I appreciate it very, very much.
Group like the recommendations abuse or the registration abuse working group, consider inviting us. I mean, I don't have a full time ability to constantly monitor every little thing ICANN's doing. So if I got an invitation to participate, I would drop what I was doing to participate.
All right, super. All right, we want to thank you so much for being here, and now we're going to turn this over to probably the greatest soldier for trademarks since. Tom McCarthy, and that's Christina Rosette, our GNSO representative. And for all of you that don't know, Christina has not felt well all day and has soldiered herself up out of the sick bed through the snow to be here to assist us today. And we couldn't do it without you. And thank you so very,
very
much
kind.
For everything.
Thank
I'm going to turn control
okay.
of the computer
all
over
right.
to you.
All right.
And
thank
she's going to give us an update on sort of what's on the ether and what's out there with regards to the GNSO right now.
Right. Although there's a lot, and in fact, there's so much that I'm not going to even try and cover it all. I'm really going to focus on what the highlights are. Just kind of running through kind of the high points in terms of PDP, pre-PDP, and other various activities, and I'll run through each of these in a little bit more detail. I think really kind of the key ones right now, although I've just realized that there is one on here that's not on here, GNSO improvements, registration abuse policies, post-expiration domain recovery, vertical integration, registrar accreditation agreement, who is an inter-registrar transfer. And I guess what I would also add to that is the affirmation of commitments, and particularly with regard to the review teams, because the GNSO Council is charged with identifying and presenting to the president and the chairman of the board candidates for this first review team. And if I remember correctly, applications are taken until March 7. The council has scheduled a special meeting to vote on them on the 15th or 16th, and we'll go from there. Just because I haven't done a slide on it, just wanted to get into a little bit more detail. At this point, what the council is planning to do is all of the information is going directly to ICANN. Once those applications come in and it appears to be somebody that would be a GNSO candidate, it's sent to us. And we are ultimately, I think the plan is each stakeholder group will be able to identify one person whose name they want to have put forward. There is going to be one, quote-unquote, open slot, and that's for somebody who's not affiliated with any particular stakeholder group. And we've got kind of a checklist that we're running through to determine whether somebody who perhaps states an affiliation is, in fact, not affiliated, or more likely doesn't state an affiliation but is. And once we get that pool, we anticipate there will be one person selected from that. And then the sixth slot is that it will be kind of a hodgepodge. Any of the stakeholder groups can put somebody's name forward. If it turns out that there's a second unaffiliated candidate that's really good, it can come from that. We do not expect Peter and Giannis to take six GNSO candidates for this first review team, but I was on the drafting team for coming up with the selection process, and it became very clear very early on that trying to come up with a system where you had to figure out which stakeholder group was going to be allowed to nominate somebody was frankly just pointless, and that it would just deteriorate very quickly. So the idea was each stakeholder group can come up with one and, you know, let Peter and Giannis decide it from there. So
can I just add one comment on that? Christina described the process, which is kind of complicated, but I think one thing that's very important is we need to identify some good candidates for these slots, and not just the GNSO slots. These could be people that really don't have any connection with the GNSO, but we do want people on these teams that will kind of hold, aren't just going to say, oh, ICANN is, you know, doing a great job and they're making progress on accountability and transparency, and we'll come back 3 years from now and tell you, you know, how everything is going. I think we want this to be a rigorous review if we can. So we need people that are independent, have some knowledge of ICANN, but I don't think they need to be people that are day-to-day ICANN. And I think there's going to be a big stress on geographic diversity, gender diversity. But I think we know there's going to be a bunch of candidates for North America. And Mark Bohannon, our IT treasurer, is going to put his name forward, and that could be through the CSG process. But I think it really is in our interest to try to identify between now and March 7th, how about that, some really good candidates and encourage them to step forward. It's an important job. It's also demanded. I think we're saying 15 days of work between now and not paid.
And a lot of the work will happen after the ICANN meeting. So you'll essentially, the assumption is you'll have to travel there. But, yeah, absolutely. And there was significant division in the drafting team about
are they
very
travel?
Yeah.
So it would be like being on the nominating committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so there definitely was significant division within the drafting team on things like geographic diversity, gender diversity. There are some people on the drafting team who felt very strongly that counselors should be eligible. There were people, including myself, who felt very strongly the other way. You know, I just think that this is going to be a really important process. And frankly, as long as the council selection requirements really are focused on gender and geographic diversity, I think we need to do what we can to identify, frankly, women from Asia or Africa.
Do you think we need Ellen to do it?
I think we should.
Ellen's always a strong candidate. Ellen's a strong candidate because she has CCTLD experience that brings to the table and a different perspective from a different jurisprudence background, because Israel is a parliamentary system and she brings into it a different. So I think let's reach out to her. I'm going to make a call to Sally Abel next week, who, for those of you who don't know, is a practitioner at Fenwick and West in Palo Alto, Mountain View area, who was very early on involved in the development of the IPC and of ICANN. So she sort of has some cred. So those are two females, but I every time we put out a call in Asia and Africa, we get a resounding silence from our membership as to people who are willing to commit the time.
Yeah. Claudia?
Is the process that's being sort of fleshed out now, the idea that it's going to follow the process of all of these?
No, we were very clear on that. This was really kind of a fire drill to try and meet the deadlines. And, you know, one of the great ironies that was noted on the drafting team and the council is that the timeline was so short that basically everybody had to disregard their usual processes for collecting input from their stakeholder groups. So, you know, I think you can assume that in terms of some of the baseline requirements, things will be similar. But I think really as we get into the more specialized review teams, that there will be a greater emphasis on expertise in particular subject areas.
Well, I need to take one moment just quickly. Those on the phone, are you having trouble hearing Christina and myself, or is it that you're having trouble hearing the people in the audience who are not near the mic? Can somebody respond?
You and Christina are coming through crystal clear.
Well, they can hear me. We just can't hear them. How do I get it to go?
Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
I guess not.
Okay. Well, they can respond in writing as well in the chat room and let us know.
They
can hear us? Okay. So we need to do a better job about... If you're going to do something other than ask a question, you're going to make a statement, if you would move up near the mic, if you're going to do a multi-word comment.
I'll just say, look ahead 6 months. There will be the Who Is review team, and that's very important for this constituency. It won't go by these exact rules, but it may be simple.
Did everyone hear that? Okay.
Any other questions before I move on? All right. GNSO improvements. That torturous process is still ongoing. The contracted party house stakeholder groups have had their charters approved. That is not the case in our house, and it's my understanding that that's something that is still
ongoing, as is constituency recertification. In terms of processes, the working group guidelines that were developed by the group that our esteemed leader, J. Scott Evans, chaired, are now out for public comment and will really, I think, set how all of the work that's going to be done in the future is going to be done. And I think these are actually pretty important guidelines. If J. Scott, if there's anything in particular that you think might be sufficiently controversial that we need to support or emphasize or really muster support?
To be quite honest with you, the reason I drove this is I worked at it as a codification of what we've been doing rather than creating something new, and that's what you need to realize. We have for 2 years been sort of doing this anyway, and so that made it very easy to put down what we were doing. Probably the most controversial, and it will never be not controversial, is the idea of what is consensus and what is rough consensus. And the reality is, at some point, subjectivity just falls into it. We all have to understand that we're adults. We'll have to do the best we can. And the way you handle that, and I was able to garner support within the working group, is trying to put together effective appeals mechanisms so that those things can be reviewed. You can't create a system for the exceptions, you create a review system for the exceptions, and that is a smarter way to go about it. And so far, I think they're pretty good, but I've been real close to them, so I would love to have someone read through them, perhaps someone at the INTA subcommittee level, and let us know what you think. But I think we've done a nice job at least at getting a rough draft out there.
All right. PDP guidelines are in progress. That's a working group chaired by Jeff Newman, and it's my understanding, and I think, Brian, you may be on that group, that you all have had significant difficulty in kind of getting uniform attendance and sufficient attendance to kind of move the process forward. Is that?
I think that's fair to say.
Up close to the microphone so people can hear you, sir.
It's been very hard to get uniform attendance, and it's also honestly been very onerous because we've had oftentimes weekly hour-and-a-half-long calls. And so as someone who is trying to participate in every single one, even for me it's been difficult to make every single one. And so it has been a challenge moving forward. We also got delayed because we tried to schedule a face-to-face meeting, and that created a whole quagmire. And people came out of the woodwork like crazy because suddenly – people all over the world thought they were getting funding to fly for the face-to-face meeting. So suddenly, we sort of had this groundswell of people, and now they've kind of disappeared, of course. The face-to-face meeting was killed. So it's been a long process and a struggle. At the same time, I think, to Jeff's credit, we've moved forward a lot, and we've gotten through a lot of the phases, and I think we're winding towards actually completing the process. So
okay.
I think it'll be done fairly soon.
So, like, by Brussels, before Brussels, we see something out for public comment, you think?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, excellent. Great. Any questions about this before I move on? All right. Registration of use policy. Oh, Claudio?
Yeah, I was just going to say there's also.
Yeah, please do.
There's also part of genital improvement. There's a constituency stakeholder group operations work team. And right now we're looking at several issues. One that's already been approved by the work team, and it went up to the council and has been approved, is a toolkit of services for the constituencies where we would receive basically mostly administrative support from ICANN on things like keeping the website up to date, a variety of other support services, including possibly getting funds from ICANN if they don't have the service available themselves. They could give the constituency funding to go out and get it on our own end. So right now that document is with the staff. Rob Hogart and Julie Hedlund are both working through implementing that document, so I assume they're probably going to be reaching out to the constituency soon to get our input on that. So that's something that's underway, and hopefully that will be pretty helpful. The other issues are developing a set of common principles and operating rules that all the constituencies and stakeholder groups should follow. So we're working through two documents there, and we're pretty close to wrapping those up. I would say maybe by perhaps shortly after Nairobi, we'll have those completed.
I have to tell you, this is Jay Scott. I'm very disturbed about some of the drafts I've seen in the second document. And the problem, the reason I am disturbed about it is because rather than being a best practices or this is what we'd like to see, they keep trying to waver this language over to this is a mandatory structure that you're going to have to adopt. And I frankly just don't, I'm not going to, not as long as I'm IPC president, am I going to say that that's something we're going to do, that we would exceed our method and membership structure and voting structure and decision-making structure to ICANN to decide how we're going to do it. ICANN doesn't pay to get us to these meetings, so they don't get a vote in how we run our particular. And I don't have a problem with them giving a list of principles that we should aspire to, and then we can use whatever methods we think are necessary to get to those principles. But I have a real problem with telling me that the structure has to be a certain way. We have to have weighted voting, or we have to have all categories of members. I'm not saying that those aren't issues that we should internally discuss and review. I'm saying ICANN is not and should not serve that function or role with regards to this constituency.
Yeah, that's a great point. And those are really the types of issues we're working through as on the work team, because we there are some proposals out there, and we're going through and discussing them in detail in light of what you said to make sure that everyone would be comfortable really living by these rules. So it is a process that we're working through ourselves. And that's pretty much it. There will be another effort on outreach that after we complete the work on the operating principles, there's going to be some recommendations on outreach and how all the stakeholder groups, constituencies could further increase their representativeness and participation. I mean, I'll cut it up, team.
Thanks. Thanks, Claudia. Registration Abuse Policies Working Group. This working group completed its initial report recently. Public comments are ongoing and will end March 28th. There's a session in Nairobi on Wednesday afternoon local time. It's my understanding that the final report will include public comments and then will be the basis for final recommendations. My very quick skim, and I may defer to Faisal and Fred, who I think both participated, my very quick skim is that the only point that came out of that working group that had unanimous support was that there should be a PDP on the UDRP. And the other thing that I think is important about this in this context is that the council intentionally decided not to initiate a – this is not a PDP working group. This is a working group that was intended to figure out what issues, if any, do we need to have a PDP on. My takeaway, and I think this is something we might want to talk about once we go offline, is, you know, it seems at this point a PDP on the UDRP,
I know,
laugh at myself when I say that, is inevitable. And as a practical matter, you know, regardless of what our views on it are, there's no way that even if we could get the entire commercial stakeholder group to object, that we'd be able to stop it from happening just because the voting thresholds are so low. So, you know, my personal view is that I think we need to start planning smart and be ready. Anything that you guys would add after having been in that group?
If you're going to add something, come up front.
You don't want to move? Don't blame you.
I guess the one thing with this group is, you know, that was the draft report, and the chair of that group is extremely biased. I'll just put it out there. And so it's a very narrow margin on almost every vote. So comments are going to be really helpful, especially coming from the IPC.
Written comments.
Written comments. Because otherwise, almost every recommendation is tenuous. So we really need some help from this group.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Greg Ahrens.
I think that what I've learned today is he's voting in this particular thing. He's been voting, and I don't think he's supposed to vote. So I think if we agree, I have no problem as president of the intellectual property constituency writing Chuck Gomes a letter saying it's my understanding that the supposed neutral chair is taking positions, advocating and voting, and putting in a formal complaint. Is that something we want to do? Let's do it. Let's call him out. If it's close, narrow margins and he's doing that, I mean, I was the chair of the committee for the working group committee, and I did not vote on anything. I just drove the process forward and set timelines. I would say I have a personal opinion on that. Do you want to hear it? And if they did, I would give it. But that's how you're supposed to operate one of these groups.
I mean, Martin Sutton, by the way, is the only brand holder from HSBC on the entire working group, just to put it out there. So we need some support for this group.
Claudio, you need to come up front.
Yeah, well, just on the last point that you raised, I was just going to say, would that depend on the charter of the work?
No. The way this whole thing is, without any rules have been put into place, is based on sort of loosely what they do in other technical organizations. And the chair is not supposed, they're supposed to be a neutral, non-voting chair.
He's voting on every issue.
And I know that may not be written anywhere, but if he's doing that, to me, he's violating the way it's supposed to go, especially when it's a close call. And I think we should say, and if Chuck comes back and says, that's not the way it is, then they're going to have some explaining to do, Lucy, to me.
Oh, be mad at me. All
okay.
Right, no, I think it's something we should talk about when we go offline.
There is one point, though. I have to raise this, but both Fred and I voted, and we're both from the same company. So, you know.
You're rich, though. You're allowed to.
Okay, I mean, I'm just pointing that out.
We want you to. Well, I mean, we had to, otherwise we would have never, we would have never had anything.
But the way the working groups do is anyone can show up, and when they do consensus, and they can anybody can show up unless you are an IPC representative, then you only one person can vote on behalf of the IPC. But if you show up as Nick Wood can vote as long as he's not representing the IPC.
Well, this whole thing about voting is very murky to me.
Yep.
You know, we've had the situation where people were on a working group claiming to be IPC representatives, and we didn't know who they were, and then they identified an organization that they were a member of, and the organization didn't know who they were, and yet they were listed as an IPC representative. It's totally self-identified. So I'm just not sure we should be focusing on the procedural issue. If as I'm gathering here, there are substantive problems, and the minority view is something that we need to be looking at on a lot of these recommendations.
Okay.
Then maybe we should look at that. We could point out, you know, that there have been procedural questions. But we probably want to engage on some of the substantive issues, and maybe at some point we could get a briefing from Faisal and Fred about what are some of the key issues to address.
All righty. Post-expiration domain recovery. This working group focuses on registrant difficulties in recovering domain names after the initial expiration date. This is the PDP that came about through the initiative of the ALAC liaison on the GNSO Council. It's my understanding that most recently they conducted a survey, or they had ICANN staff conduct a survey to review what the various registrar practices and processes were relating expiration, renewal, and recovery, and apparently there are really significant and substantial differences among registrars, which, given that you actually technically, I think, already have a policy in place, is of particular concern.
This was amazing to me. I have sat in on some of these calls, and what's amazing to me is we're even having a discussion about vertical integration when you go to one of these meetings and find out what's already going on in the marketplace. Because what I discovered was that, and I guess I just don't know because we're Yahoo, but there are a lot of registrars now who have changed their registration agreement to say that if you don't renew, they automatically own the domain name. So what they're doing is they're using that provision to then gobble up those domain names who they've watched traffic for and then auction it off or PPC it themselves. And I think that's, you know, here we are in a situation where we're told again and again by ICANN that there's no real estate in .com, so we need new .whatevers to create real estate. But the fact of the matter is the very backbone providers are creating a false scarcity by gaining and grabbing up all the quote-unquote valuable names based on inside information that they have. To me, that's extremely problematic. It points out why breaking down barriers to vertical integration are absolute nightmarish, and we need to stand up and shine some light on this.
And my understanding is that this is a group that has had significant difficulty in reaching consensus because of the financial incentives at stake, frankly, to the registrar community participants. And that what they've apparently done, and I didn't know this until I was putting this presentation together, what they apparently did is they are so scattered in terms of consensus that they essentially are now doing a survey among the working group members to see if there's any way that they can reach consensus even on really granular things. So, you know, I think this is something that we definitely need to keep watching. I don't know that we actually have anybody participating.
I've tried, but it's just with all the stuff I've had to do, I've not been able to. I think Paul McGrady has been involved some.
Right.
I have not seen any reports. Paul, are you still on the phone? Is this gone to sleep again? Are we awake? Paul, are you still on the phone? What I will do is I will drop him a line after this meeting and ask if he has been attending. If not, I think it would be important that we put out to the list somebody or a couple of people who could tag team with one another that would watch this for us, because I think this is very important. Fred?
We have Matt Serlin from our organization on this group, so...
Okay. Fred has pointed...
Okay.
We probably need to have him show up at a leadership meeting for the IPC leadership and give us an update on what the goings-on are, because I believe this is a real problem. Again, it shocks me to death that the Department of Justice hasn't stepped in at some point with all of this to say, guys, this is like insider trading. I mean, that's exactly what you're doing. If you're trading on inside information, you're creating a false scarcity in the market, and that's problematic. When you have the, what is it my mother used to say, the fox guarding the chicken house? So, go ahead.
Vertical integration, which we talked about a little bit. This, I think, procedurally is kind of interesting in that there's a provision in the new operating principles for the council that you can initiate a PDP where you have more than two-thirds of one house, and that's frankly how we got this through. The registries and registrar stakeholder groups voted against it. The ISPs voted against it, and frankly, we were able to kind of cobble together a very loose coalition with the NCSG folks and our BC brethren. The other thing that's interesting about this is that I think this was the first of something we're going to start seeing a lot more of, in that I personally think that the issues report that staff prepared was frankly extraordinarily biased and incomplete. Their recommendation was that there should be no PDP. ICANN is adamant that new GTLDs will go forward regardless of whether this PDP process is completed or not before that happens. And I think we are going to have to start, when we get these issues reports, start reviewing them a little bit more carefully than perhaps we have in the past. There is a drafting team that had prepared a charter. That charter was actually delivered to the council this morning. It was, frankly, very contentious. There was a particular objective in it. Do you remember the exact wording?
All I can tell you is I got involved and I rewrote the whole damn thing, and all but one they accepted.
Right.
It's very clear that when they don't have attorneys involved, there's a lot of wandering around with their eyes closed about. They just don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to put together a document that makes any sense. I mean, basically, the document didn't just make any sense. And we rewrote it, Christina and I did. And Objective 5, did they do the alternative? What did they put forward? They put forward Milton's language. And so, and that was against our objection. We had said that we wanted the working group to look at what effect,
possible effects,
what possible effects breaking down a vertical integration would have on the wholesale and retail market. And Milton says you can't do that. You can't look at possible effects. It's impossible to do so, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. So I think that that's the whole point of doing the entire thing, is to find out how it will affect the market, right? Even if what you do is you engage an economist to look at the market as it exists today and give you an opinion about what it would happen when you change the structure, you make assumptions. That's what all analysis is, when you come down to it, when you're operating in a market that has yet to be created. But they went forward, and I can't remember the exact wording, but...
Now, basically, Objective 5, as it will go forward, will basically identify whether there are any material deviations between kind of existing and current practices and what's been proposed, which to me is extraordinarily incomplete, but that's how they're going to go forward. I did get a communication from a couple of the folks in the registry constituency stakeholder group saying that they had wanted to support our version, but they had real concerns, frankly, that ICANN would botch the study that would be necessary to identify these possible effects. And
well, they've botched every study they've done.
Right, right. And their concern basically was, we know they're going to screw it up, and we don't want to take the chance that they're going to do it, screw it up, and go ahead anyway on the basis of this flawed result.
Now, one of the things that we probably could try to do in this regard is to try to cajole some university professor or department to do the study themselves, and that's always something you can do. Now, at INTA, generally, we have shied away from that because you don't know what the answer you'll get, and the answer could be, this is the greatest thing that's ever occurred. So I don't know, but that's a thought,
right.
I mean, is to have someone do, because that's the kind of thing that universities do like to do, is to do studies into this, because it's a very publishable paper.
Right. The other thing that I think is notable about this, that I'm still stunned, is that this charter for the work group has various definitions in it.
Yeah.
And we learned during the course of the conversation that at no point in time, from the very beginning of this discussion to today, is there a specific definition of vertical integration that has been identified, developed, and relied upon in this debate. So in other words, we've been having this debate for I don't even know how long now, and there's no one has defined what vertical integration is, which to me is just shocking. And I think, again, kind of going forward is something that we need to try and identify, you know, where these terms are advancing policy and they haven't been defined, that obviously is not great. Registrar accreditation agreement, there's two work teams. Work Team A, which is developing a registrant rights charter, Work Team B that leads, that I'm going to, without any prior notice, ask you to talk about.
Could you come up front?
Please?
Yes.
Can you come up front and ask a question?
My question was just about the charter.
Yeah.
Once it gets approved by the council, can it not be amended? Or like?
It can't be amended without a council vote.
I would have to go back to it.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the middle of the PUP, someone wanted to amend it, that's how it worked.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Team B, I can't really speak to Team A, although I did. I know they're trying to develop kind of a statement of what rights registrants have under the existing registrar accreditation agreement. They don't really want to do that. What they want is an aspirational document that would say how, in the best of all possible worlds, all the rights that registrants would have. So I'm not sure. Maybe they might come out with both. B, what we have done is our charter is to identify the issues and recommend a process for next steps. We have a very long document with lots of very interesting proposals for amendments to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. Some came from our working group of the IPC. A lot of them came from staff, had some very good recommendations. A number came from law enforcement, and then there were a few others as well. And what we are going to – we're almost done going through that document and identifying which are high and low priority. I'd be glad to share that with anybody that's interested, or it's up on the GNSO site. But we now have to recommend the process for the next step. What do we think ought to be done with this list? How do we think we should move toward a revised registrar accreditation agreement? And I think it's worth having a discussion about that soon, because I don't think we're well served if it just kind of goes through if all this stuff goes through a policy development process. Also, I don't think we're well served by the process that they did on the last one, which was ICANN and the registrars got in a room, and the registrars picked ICANN's pocket, and that was basically how we have the RAA we have now. So hopefully we can come up with a better recommendation that's between those two polls.
how about we suggest or we start lobbying for a summit, a three-day summit to be held on the RAA? And
who's going to be there?
Show up. Anybody can show up.
Yeah.
And but we just make sure that we show up. The registrar sure as hell will show
up.
Yeah,
they'll be there. It's interesting because they've not, you know, they've not been breathing fire and brimstone. They sort of had a filibuster strategy a little bit on this working group, I think. But so it'll be interesting to see. We now have a good list. I mean, there's some things on there that, you know, may or may not be that important. But we've got a good list of stuff. And the question is what would be the best process to recommend. But we need to, you know, we're hoping to deliver all this to the council in April. So we're kind of, it's timely now to talk about the process.
Thank you. Who is, let's go back memory lane. the GNSO Council had recommended studies on various aspects of who is, and there was an entire matrix of a working group that came up with potential ideas for studies, topic areas. The Who Is Accuracy Study has been completed and published for public comment. It's definitely interesting reading. I would encourage everyone to read it. It's my understanding that the staff is now reviewing RFP responses for other studies that have been called for, and that process is kind of moving forward slowly but surely. Fred?
Fred, you need to step up front.
So on the Who Is Accuracy study, it was characterized by the registrar's constituency as activist IP folks influencing that, and that it was complete hogwash. And that was Bruce Tonkins, by the way, who said that.
Right.
So there's some. It was characterized as IP activist hogwash. I think it was words to that effect.
Well, let me just tell you one of the most interesting comments that I've probably ever heard spoken, an omission against interest that I've ever heard spoken. I was like, who is your lawyer? Elliot Knoth.
This is awesome.
is sitting in a meeting where we are getting a briefing on this particular topic from the person that designed the study. And at one point, he says, you know, I was thinking about this with my marketing guy, and I said, you know, maybe we do need to get this stuff accurate because we may be losing out on a lot of renewals that we could be maximizing if we don't have accurate information. So that's maybe real important. And he said, oh, don't worry about that. I have all that information in a different database. We know how to get a hold of them.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to Bobby Flame and said, you need to find out the phone number for Elliot's accounting office and start sending your subpoenas to them, since obviously they have the information. So, I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous. It's smoke and mirrors. It is not activist trademark owners. It's moms and dads. It's people who... Christina recently had a case that a domain name that was registered through us is registered to a young lady who's horrified to find she owns an infringing domain name she didn't know she owned because somebody has put up all her information as the information. And that is the new scam with phishing sites, is to get some mom in Connecticut and list her as the owner so when everybody shows up.
Or Southend, Indiana.
Yeah. So this is a serious problem that affects people in a lot of ways, and it's not just trademark owners. And so I think that that's hogwash right back at you, Bruce.
Inter-registrar transfer policy working group, there are a whole host of issues relating to the inter-registrar transfers. So they've taken the work and divided up into groups. They're working on Part B dealing with registrar-related transfer complaints. Apparently, there was a report generated by ICANN Compliance, which I was not aware of, and I think it probably might make interesting reading. They're reviewing constituency statements and are in the process of finalizing their initial report and expect to have some information fairly soon.
This is another one that has gone on. I mean, I remember discussing this in Montevideo, the inter-transfer, and who is.
There are a lot of subparts.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of subparts.
Okay.
There's a lot more that I have not covered in the interest of time. One thing that I just want to put on everybody's radar screen is that staff is starting to fuss about the policy staff is starting to complain about how bad the workload is. And in fact, when there was the motion to initiate the PEP on vertical integration, staff pushed back very hard on the ground that they simply did not have the time and the capacity. And there's some very interesting responses to that on the recording of that call. So I do think that to the extent that there are additional policy issues that we want to see addressed before new GTLDs are rolled out, I think we need to be very strategic about how we identify and pursue those.
Okay. At this point, everyone, we are going to, operator, we can end in about 5 minutes the recording. This is the end of our public meeting. We thank everyone for attending. If you are an IPC member, you should have received via the list a separate dial-in and participant code for the private meeting that we are going to have to discuss internal administrative business. So we are going to take a 10-minute break. I have that it's 3:32 East Coast time, so around 3:45 we'll come back in on the new number. And if you're on the call, you are an IPC member, and you have not gotten the number, if you will contact Claudio DeGangi at his email address, we will check you against the roll and send you the call, if you call in information if you don't have it. Thank you all again. Christina, thank you so much for being here today and everything that you do. David, trial by fire, my friend. You got a pass in Nairobi due to the fact that you were going to be kidnapped and held for ransom. So I had plotted it all out, too. Your wife and I are like this. So I just want to thank everybody for attending, and we'll meet back at 3:45 on the new number. Thank you.